This podcast has been modified from its original version. It has been formatted to fit your iPod. In other words, the podcast was too long and we shortened it. If you want to hear the rest of the podcast, go to podtacular.com and just find the post with episode 224 for the extended version. Thanks and enjoy.
This is Podtacular 224, the Red vs. Blue interview for April 18th, 2010. Hello and welcome to the Podtacular Podcast with your hosts, Duststorm, G. Lewis, Brent Gamer, and me, Bernie Burns.
Yay.
That was amazing.
We got a guy at our office who does all of our voice stuff like that. He's got an actual radio announcer's voice that we love. We can't stand much else about him, though.
Really? Just the radio announcer voice is all you can put up with, right?
He's one trick, man. It's Jack. He's the guy who's one of the main guys of Achievement Hunter.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him. Well, I mean, he does a pretty good job with the AWU updates. Those are pretty interesting.
Well, let's not go crazy with the compliments.
Right.
Let's not give him too much credit now. I mean, for it.
Nah. He's cool, though.
He's cool.
But yes, as Bernie said, this is Podtacular 224, and as you've already heard, our special guest for this week is Bernie Burns from Rooster Teeth Productions. Thanks, Bernie, for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
So we've had you guys on in the podcast before. I don't remember who it was, or maybe you might know who it was back, I think, in 2006. It was one of the episodes where Fumo and JVB were hosts.
Yeah, I think it was – Jeff was saying that to me. I think it was Jeff who was on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, cause
I don't know, though.
You guys were.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a long time.
2006 for us would have been like – that would have been season four, I think, somewhere in there. So probably. Things were kind of crazy there towards the end of the Blood Gulch Chronicles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. It's a pretty good show, and we have plenty of questions regarding that for
– Well. Let's not go crazy with the compliments.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's okay.
I think you guys deserve a lot of compliments, especially for as many successes that you had with things like Red vs. Blue and a couple of the other things that you guys have done.
I don't want to put Brent on the spot, but our host here, Brent Gamer, said the only reason that he likes Halo is because of Red vs. Blue.
What, really? Yeah. Why is he on the Podtacular podcast?
I mean, he said he never played Halo until he saw Red vs. Blue, and that was the only reason why he played it. That's the only reason why he bought. Yeah. Isn't that the only? You said that's the only reason why you bought an Xbox so you can play this game.
It's a classic anecdote. I don't remember. I think it was 2005. It was an issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly, and it came with a pack-in DVD. And on the DVD, it had the Internet versus Real Life PSA.
Okay.
And I just thought that was the funniest thing on the face of the earth. So I checked out Red versus Blue, and I kind of I started really liking the character models for Halo and just the movement, and especially just Blood Gulch at the time. I thought that was a really cool map. So I went ahead and I bought an Xbox, and Halo 2 had just come out at the time. So picked up Live and started playing Halo 2, and it was all downhill from there. Now I'm hosting a podcast with Dustin and Greg, and now I'm talking to Bernie Burns, and I don't know, I've made it. I made it to the top.
You know, Brent, you followed the path to Halo is what I call the girlfriend model, because most of the time when we hear that story, it's from some guy's girlfriend. Like, he played Halo nonstop, and she didn't like him playing Halo constantly, but she could watch Red versus Blue, and so that's what they would do together. So you're like a lot of girlfriends out there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been equated to girlfriends on occasion, so that's fine.
Oh, boy. So you're into your eighth season of Red vs. Blue right now, right? The final season?
Yeah, eighth season. This is the last season of the current trilogy, whatever the heck that means. Yeah, but we're in essentially Red vs. Blue season 8. We kind of...
Sorry.
We just start, you know, start a new plot line. We started it with Reconstruction, using essentially the same characters that everyone was used to, but with a new plot line.
Ooh.
Right.
Which is weird, because the original Blood Gulch Chronicles, we didn't really have much of a plot line, but people still felt like when they jumped in at episode 92, it was too hard for them to figure out what was going on, and they felt like they had to watch, you know, 4.5 days straight of Red versus Blue to catch up.
Right. And then you had the three alterations to episode 100. Or, I guess there were six.
Yeah, yeah.
There were three that were aired, and then there were six actual ones, right?
I think that's right. For some reason, I want to say there were seven, but yeah, I think we put three up on the website, and then on the DVD we had another three.
Right.
I think you're right. I could go through and name them all, but that sounds about right.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
so are you trying to say that this is going to be the last season of like Church and Sarge and all them, or is the next season possibly going to be we're going to see the same characters again?
You know, we haven't really – honestly, we're so focused on getting this story done that we haven't really thought about, you know, who's going to be in the next one or what it's going to be focused on. The you know, when we came back from Blood Gulch Chronicles, we put most of the guys in but not all of them. And then it just seemed like the number one question was, when is this guy coming back? When is that guy coming back, you know? Mm-hmm. And like Tucker and Donut and Tex weren't there, you know, in the first iteration of this series in Reconstruction, they weren't there, and it's just like endless questions. So we haven't really given a thought about it. We've been working with those characters for so long now that, I mean, really, it's like you just make a scenario and you figure out, well, who's funniest in this scenario, you know, as opposed like it's supposed to like picking, okay, I want to have this guy and this guy and this guy, and let's write a story that fits for them. It doesn't really work that way.
Well, it almost seems you kind of do that with the PSAs almost. I mean, they're not necessarily all blown out stories, but they're just little snippets of random things.
Yeah, I mean, those are just like one-off little jokes. They're not, you know, tied into the narrative at all. At first, you know, we were worried that people would like not get that, but people have been okay with that, you know, just doing something that doesn't tie into the story at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got one planned for 2 weeks from now, I think.
Well, I think it also goes along really well that you guys are more comedy-based than a serious storyline. And there are aspects to Red vs. Blue that are really serious. But since you guys have that humor that everyone's accustomed to, I think everyone's kind of used to it and okay with it.
Well, I do hear the word serious sometimes. And I mean, I don't think we write anything that's serious. I mean, it's just that I think that we have, you know, some actual plot points to kind of like bring you back. You know what I mean? But it's right. All just the same. It's all the same idiots. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess you could say the only serious character was Wash, and even he's getting, you know, a little funnier over time.
Yeah.
But it's hard to peg a guy who's like the serious guy. It's basically they run up against serious stuff, but we get to view it through the eyes of the idiots. You know, it's kind of like You know, it's kind of like a big metaphor for Red versus Blue, kind of in the Halo universe. You know what I mean? It's like you get the feeling that there's this very cool bigger thing going on in these. You know, bunch of lunkheads kind of mucking around in it, you know?
Yeah. Well, the thing that I was thinking of when I said serious was the Reconstruction trailer. I mean, that had a very serious tone to it.
Yeah, you know, with Reconstruction 2, the first episode did too, where it was just set up the plot points, you know, of Reconstruction. And we made sure in this movie, for lack of a better term, this one, we started the season, that the first episode wasn't just all plot, because I don't think I realized – Reconstruction is my favorite thing that we've done so far. And I think we kind of made a mistake in that we set the tone, I think, with that first episode. Like people saw that first episode in the trailer and they said that this is the tone of this. This is what this is. And it's just like – you know,
yeah, that's what I thought. That's exactly
But I mean, it wasn't, you know, at the end of that episode, I mean, the second episode of Reconstruction, he's this, you know, investigator's in Blood Gulch getting yelled at by Sister for being old. And he's Sarge has all these like pop up cutouts of all the other guys popping up. I mean, I don't see how, you know, people could see that and, you know, think that we're trying to do something that's serious or heady or anything like that. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we definitely put stuff in there that's like is interesting because we don't want to just write. You know, stand around and talk jokes constantly, you know, but it's definitely not trying to be like serious or anything like that, I wouldn't say. Did y'all like ODST?
Yes. I liked it. I honestly thought the storyline in ODST was three times better than it was in Halo 3.
I think if you took Dare out, it would have been three times better.
To Greg the doesn't like. Character?
Yeah, he doesn't like girls. This is like the Little Rascals, like Boys Club or whatever.
Yeah, it
no
is.
No girls around. He's got a little clubhouse up in a tree somewhere.
I just didn't think that that whole, you know, him and her and Vigil at the end, or Virgil at the end, that is. I was like, come on, for real. It's just like they didn't have any of it until the very end, and it just seemed like they were just trying to rush it out of the end.
I thought it was pretty cool. Wait. What do you mean they didn't have any of it at the
end? I mean, it was like you saw that they were bitching at each other at the start, and then they didn't really interact that much until the very end.
You mean Buck and Dare?
Yeah.
Not Virgil.
Yeah, I know.
At the very end, Virgil and Dare. Oh,
no, at the very end when they take Virgil out and then they're all kissy kissy.
Yeah, Dare and Virgil is in the Japanese version of the game.
Yeah, that's the fan fiction I'm writing right now.
They set up all that stuff. In fact, I felt like they were setting it up too clearly at the beginning. Like they were their banter with each other. And then don't forget, they go away from both Buck and Dare through pretty much the whole second act of that game because you're off with Mickey and those other guys, you know, doing their thing. And Dare's underground somewhere, so there's not really much they can do with it, you know?
Yeah. And it makes sense, but I was saying it just seemed to me, I'm not trying to say I know anything about video games at this point. Okay. Four shot and hit.
There we go. No, I hear you. You like what you like, right?
Yeah, and it just appeared. I've only played through it twice, but it just appeared that it was like there is little emphasis on it, and then at the end they just threw it in there.
Well,
I liked it a lot. I still think it is the best single story Halo game story wise. But I just didn't enjoy the whole Darren Buck thing.
Yeah.
I don't think there was really much opportunity for them to do much with it. With how the storyline was laid out.
It just feels like that would have been the script to a movie if they would have done it, because they said Master Chief wasn't in it. You know, it just felt like it would have panned out to be an okay movie. It had a little bit of everything in it.
Yeah, and plus, you know, in the main Halo storyline, you've got that relationship, but on a much more subtle level with Chief and Cortana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, that's long and drawn out and really subtle. This was, you know, self-contained, and, you know, I like that. ODST, I really liked a lot. It seemed like all of a sudden this game came out of nowhere in the franchise, and it was like really different, but still felt like Halo at the same time. I thought they nailed it. And, you know, but like I said, I've never been much of a multiplayer guy or like in a competitive level. So that's why I like Firefight. It was like a nice throwback to getting your boxes together and playing with a bunch of friends, you know? So
yeah, that was nice.
I enjoyed Firefight a lot. I still enjoy Firefight a lot, even though I can't get the freaking achievement for get to the last round with four people. Thing I can't do. I still need it. I haven't done it yet. We've tried it. I don't know how many times, and I still have not done it.
I think we've tried three times.
I mean, you tried three times with me. I've tried a lot. But
did you get that achievement, Bernie?
What's that?
The one where you survive four rounds on heroic.
Yeah. What? Endure? Is that it?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I've got everything you need for recon, so I definitely have that. I'm only missing like a few achievements in Halo 3 that I'm just never, ever, ever gonna get.
Is it like the FFA ones?
Like the perfection one, I'm not gonna get 15 kills in a round and not die. That's not gonna happen. I hover at a solid -1 kill death ratio. I do not. I don't get.
That's,
you know,
that actually.
Yeah, it's respectable.
I don't know,
of course, Flink is pros most of the time too. So. Anyway.
Yeah, sorry guys, I got interrupted here for a second. Yeah, but I.
It's fine.
Yeah, my kill death ratio for Halo 2 across 3,000 games multiplayer, I think.
Whoa.
I'm like average like -0.15 or something like that. So yeah, I played a lot of Halo 2. A lot of Halo 2 matchmaking.
Yeah, I think I played tops like 1,500.
We can check.
I played a lot of custom.
Yeah.
I actually just logged in because I wanted to check.
Before we get off topic real quick, we have a question from Chucky J, one of our forum mods. He says, what do you think about the Dante's Inferno references from ODST?
What do I think about the Dante's Inferno references from ODST? I guess I haven't read Dante's Inferno, so I couldn't really speak to it.
Like the nine circles of hell, and then there's nine circles going down nine levels. Virgil is a guy who leads Dante through everything. I mean, that's basically what he's talking about.
Yeah. No, I've never read Dante's Inferno, so I don't know. But, I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, it definitely felt like something that was I would imagine a lot of that's intentional, you know. It definitely seems like a more arty Halo product, so I wouldn't be surprised if that stuff is in there. And when people put stuff in there like that, when authors do that, even if you don't know the actual source material that they're referencing, you can still draw out of it. I mean, there's a reason why that source material speaks to people, you know. And it's kind of cool to see that stuff layered in. I think that's, you know, I think it's how a lot of people get their literature and content these days. They might get it from a secondary or tertiary source. It's so funny, we get references, you know, a lot of people watch Red vs. Blue, you know, that are interested in watching content online. They tend to be younger people as well. And it's crazy some of the comments we'll get. Like Jeff made a comment one time in a post when he put up a new video for Red vs. Blue. He put it up and he wrote, hey, I'm posting the video today because we all just got back from Denver. We just flew back from Denver, and boy are our arms tired. And that's like the oldest joke in the world. And like the second comment on that post was, way to steal a joke from South Park. And it was like, that goes back to like W.C. Fields making that joke. And this kid had only heard it on South Park. So it's interesting where, you know, people formulate like this. I'm sure people will go out and read Dante's Inferno now based on the fact that Halo ODST references it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking right now at my service record for Halo 2. Is Halo 2 off here now? Did they pull it off when it died last week?
No, I mean, it shows I got 2,500 games that I played in Halo 2, 36 that I played in Halo 2.
See, there you go. That's respectable.
I don't know what my stats are, though. Are your stats on there?
Yeah, they're up at the top. I have total games. I have 2421, almost 2,500. And then my total kills, 17,891. And my total deaths were 17,950. So out of 35,000 possible deaths and kills, I'm within 50 kills and deaths of each other across 3 years or whatever that is. That's crazy.
That's pretty good.
That was in Halo 2. Yeah.
That's Halo 2. That's Halo 2.
Yeah. Mine was total kills 1,700, total deaths 1,200, basically.
You didn't play much Halo 2, it sounds like. Saying
1,700. Oh, 17,000. Sorry, yeah. 17,000. Sorry, my bad. And then 12,000. So I'm over. I'm plus a little bit. I didn't even see that was there. I was looking for it until you said it was at the top.
Yeah, and then Halo 3, I've got 669 games played in ranked. And then I wonder if it'll show up in custom as social. No, it doesn't make a difference. I got way more custom games than I do. Anyway, nice to read stats. It's nice and boring just sitting here reading stats.
Yeah. If you want to check it out, just go to Bungie.net and search up. Actually, I don't know. Search up our gamer tags. I'm trying to check them out now.
So while we're on the topic, who in the office is the best at Halo?
Well, actually, I think I'm the best at Halo.
Really? He's calling everybody else out.
Joel might give me a run for my money. We're all lousy, you know, on the global scale, but I'm probably the best one in the office.
Okay.
And if Gavin counts as somebody in the office, Gavin's right there too.
If we challenge you guys to a clan match, would you do it?
Oh, yeah, we'll do it. We get our asses kicked.
I don't know. I mean, we're not that great. I mean,
to play some objective game.
That's fine. That's fine. We'll be open to that.
Griffball, yeah.
I'm looking at my weapons, and the only two weapons that I have more deaths than kills is the assault rifle and the melee. I've been killed 1,200 times by the assault rifle, and I've only got like 200 kills with it.
Well, I look at this too. I've got about 1,600 total games in Halo 3, but 900 of them are in custom games.
Jeez.
Yeah. That's because Griffball. You know, once we started playing Griffball, we didn't play much else. And all those league games and everything, that was a blast, man. We had a great time doing that.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just checking out my stuff.
This is crazy. You look at what – I know. You get sucked into it, right? But it's just – it's so cool what Bungie does. Like this website, Bungie.net, does anyone else have anything like this to this day?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I don't think
I think they came up with a stat system for –
Doesn't Battlefield have resistance? This on the website? I think DICE has something like this for Battlefield.
I don't think this is as extensive as Bungie.
No, it's not. It's nothing. It's never close to this. But I wouldn't say nowhere close, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, it's so funny to me. Like when people look at Halo and they try to emulate the success, it's amazing the things that they just don't see that Bungie does. You know what I mean? It's just like you know they're always they do the gameplay so well, but then they do stuff like this so that you can go and look at your stats and want to play more and raise this up. And I can't believe to this day that every game doesn't have a theater mode. I don't know how that's possible. Because every time I play a game, I think, especially after I've played Halo 3 for a little while, I think when something cool happens, oh, I can't wait to see that. Oh, never mind. It's not going to happen. There's no theater mode in this game.
Pretty much it's just Halo and Forza now, right?
Yeah, well, the sports games. But yeah, I mean, that's it. And even the sports games, you got to like stop it right then and watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it just kind of makes sense that it's just a big success for Halo. I'm pretty sure it helps you guys out a ton. Don't you guys do most of your recording in theater now?
Yeah, it's really cool. It makes it slower but better. Because we can get better quality shots, which I think at the end of the day is the most important thing. But it definitely kind of hurts our efficiency a little bit because we have to do everything twice essentially. But it's nice to be able to have the characters act and they get their part right. And then I can go back later and get the camera right. And they don't have to both be right at the same time. So that's pretty cool. Right.
You also get the smooth camera with the theater mode, don't you?
Smooth camera.
Yeah, like when you're moving, it's a smooth stop. It's not an abrupt stop like you would if you have a player being the camera.
Yeah, yeah. There's a mode that somebody discovered too, the pan cam mode, where you can use the triggers to raise and lower your altitude as well, which is nice because you don't have like from 0 to 60 on your vertical movements either. You kind of ease into it, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Battlefield stats and it's nowhere close. It just shows kills, rank, and
weapons, score. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even show weapons, actually. It just says time played, kills, and your score. So actually, I was nowhere close. They made it appear. I never actually looked at it. They just were talking about how you could track all your stats online, and this is nowhere close to it.
Yeah. Did you guys read that article where it said the top five ways that Halo influenced all of video games?
So yeah, I sent it. I think I sent it to you, Dustin. Did you read it?
I think I might have read it at some point.
Yeah.
It was a while ago.
They released it this week or last week. It was fairly soon.
It must have been something older than I'm thinking of.
But yeah.
So no, you didn't send it to me.
Oh, okay. What was something you were going to talk about from what were you bringing it up, Bernie?
It was in the part of the same discussion where it's like, people are kind of chasing Halo at this point. I mean, I know Call of Duty's got its own juggernaut force going on, but just even stuff like vehicles, like Halo did vehicles right in 2001, and here it is 2010. I'm still waiting for another game where, you can jump in and out of vehicles like you can in Halo, and it feels as big a part of the game.
Mm-hmm. I guess the only thing that kind of came close was, but it's not a multiplayer aspect, would be Crackdown kind of.
Yeah, but yeah. Battlefield's got it,
Battlefield's kind of, it doesn't really work, I think, as good. I don't really think it's as realistic as they try to make it seem. I think that they try to make it kind of realistic and kind of arcadey so people would enjoy it, and I don't think that it really works as well.
Yeah, the big issue there is balance, right? So the guy in a tank isn't just ridiculously overpowered.
Yeah, yeah. So it just doesn't – I just think that the way that they did it didn't work out very good. But I don't think we've actually covered any of the questions that we've written down.
Not quite. We've been chatting. If we want to go ahead and get to those.
Yeah.
Bernie, some people have replied to your blog post, so if you ever want to bring up any of those questions, you're more than welcome to.
You bet.
On the blog post you made.
Yeah, I'm moving over to it right now.
Okay. So we have a few questions for you to before we get into too many of them. Do one of you guys, Brent or Gilles, want to ask one of your questions first?
Yeah, I want to know in Reach, who's getting a jetpack? Are you guys using them? That's the biggest thing that I wanted to ask today. Is,
you know, we did in season two, we talked about Donut wanting a jetpack and flying around in a jetpack. He'd have been a good choice, but it's kind of late for Donut to get a jetpack at this point, I think. Maybe we can do some kind of what happened to Donut between Halo 2 and Halo 3, and we find out he went to Halo Reach. There's a lot of jokes you make with Reach and Donut too, and they give a jetpack to boot. Okay. I don't know. I think we did something, one thing really right. With the gap between Blood Gulch Chronicles and the Recollection series that we're doing now, and that is, we went right from Halo 1 to Halo 2, and that was a mistake. We were very excited about just being first out of the gate. And mm-hmm. have it, you know, just seamlessly continuing Halo 1 to Halo 2. And we didn't spend enough time with Halo 2 to figure out what we were doing. We got kind of wrapped up in the first nature of doing it. And we didn't do that at all with Halo 3. We ended Blood Gulch Chronicles in June. In September, Halo 3 came out, and we didn't start doing Reconstruction until the following May. So we got to spend a lot of time and mess with it, and we're going to do the exact same thing with Reach, assuming that Microsoft and Bungie want us to make Red versus Blue videos in Reach. You know, we'll just spend a lot of time with it, and you know, first of all, we want to play it. You know what I mean? And and then you know, spend a lot of time, you know, messing around, finding out what we can do, and that really helped Reconstruction a lot. That's like I said before, that's my favorite thing that we've done so far, and we'd like to kind of catch lightning in the bottle again with anything we do in Reach.
So did it feel more structured? Yeah, that's what I'm kind of getting a feeling.
We knew what we were doing too. Like the first couple episodes we did in Halo 2, we had this big reticle on the screen because we were just trying to find the weapon that had the least amount of real estate taken up, and we used the Sentinel beam. So the first couple episodes of Red vs. Blue in Halo 2, there's this big friggin' square in the middle of the screen, and you know, about five episodes in, somebody discovered that you could drop the plasma pistol by picking up the oddball. Yeah, in a weird way, and that completely cleared the screen, which is something we'd been hoping to do all the way through Halo 1. You know, because the big thing that would help Red vs. Blue more than anything else or any machinima is just being able to turn off the HUD, but there's just no way to do that. So,
right,
at least not in the Xbox versions of the games, which are what we use. So, yeah, so we'll wait. So there's no plans to give anybody a jetpack right now, simply because we don't know, you know, what we're doing. But I mean, how can you pass up a jetpack, for crying out loud? Yeah.
Somebody can you confirm or deny that at least somebody will have it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, how can you possibly pass it up? How can you not give it to anybody? It'd be fun to have a whole team of guys who have jetpacks.
you have the blue guys back from the Beaver Creek episode. Yeah. They all have jetpacks.
Oh, that would be hilarious. The Flag Fanatics or something, whatever, I forget what they're called.
They're the Zealots.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah. Well, it'd be fun too to have the Red versus Blue guys, you know, have their old armor and they're walking around. There's like this team of guys that's way better than them that have jetpacks, you know, that are constantly like floating over their heads, you know, making fun.
How are we supposed to beat them? They have jetpacks.
It's nice.
I'd like to see Sarge utilizing a jetpack.
Sarge in a jetpack. Is he Griff in a jetpack? Griff would get a jetpack because he doesn't want to run anywhere.
Yeah, he's too damn lazy. Anyway, that's what I just want to get it out of the way. I just wanted to see what you guys said about jetpacks. That's the first thing I thought when I was watching it. Really, honestly, I was like, you know what? I can't wait. I was like, jetpacks. Oh, that's gonna be awesome in Red vs. Blue. That's the first thing. It wasn't the oh dude that's gonna because really for gameplay it looks dumb in my opinion, but I think that for like machinima and stuff it would be really cool.
So you're nervous about the jetpacks in Reach?
Gameplay wise, I just don't think that what did they make it seem like? They just make it seem like it's a mega jump more or less. But they said you can't really maneuver around, and if you don't use it right, the fall damage will actually, you know, hinder you more. But yeah. It seems like it would only help if you had a sniper rifle and you were trying to get up to higher places. Who knows?
That you're assuming also. I mean, if you had a jetpack on high ground, that would be, you know, advantageous to get over that wall.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're going to change the levels to match the gameplay, right?
I would assume.
That's what they've said.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I'm like, this is a really big change, and I don't know how it's going to affect the game. The fact that it's just that I see jetpack doesn't make me go, oh my god, jetpacks, it's great. It's like, you know, I worry about Halo and could it affect it, but I mean, so far so good, right? Everything else they've introduced.
I think Sprint could naturally go into Halo 3, I think. I think if they put Sprint into Halo 3, it would work, but if they put a jetpack into Halo 3, it wouldn't.
Well, because you have to... Like Brandy said, you have to look at what's there.
Yeah. Like, you couldn't just... They're definitely going to change. They can't just keep it the same way. They definitely... Because they were talking about, like, in the Halo 3 one, that they were talking about how they just... They had to make decisions of what they could take out and put in and so that people just wouldn't get pissed at them. And Halo Reach are like, we don't really care if people are going to get too mad. We're making the decisions that we think need to be made. It seemed like that they were saying that at least. Through all the vid docs and everything, that, you know, they're doing what they think is best rather than worrying about pissing everybody off. Did anybody else get that, or am I just thinking about this?
Well, Frank O'Connor one time had a really great quote about Halo, and he equated the multiplayer to an actual sport. And I think that was a good analogy, because what he was saying was that, you know, they have an obligation to make things new and cool, but you can't change what makes it fundamentally what it is. You can't change a sport. You can introduce new rules, but you don't change major things. And I think that's a good philosophy, you know? And I agree with him. I mean, I consider it to be like you want the basics of Halo to essentially be the same, and I don't know that a jetpack is going to change that. I think it's just an added item.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of the stuff is at the developer that you're working on, I think that you can look at it and think, wow, this is going to be the most important thing. And this is like the main feature of this. Like, I remember how excited Halo was to reveal equipment in Halo 3. That they had that trailer, but with where he has the bubble shield and he pops it out and all that stuff. And yeah. I wouldn't say that equipment was the major draw to Halo 3. Would you guys?
No,
it was just like, Halo 2 with more battle rifles.
The gameplay was great and the graphics were great and, you know, we had all new levels and everything else. So it was I don't know that equipment was – so maybe jetpacks at the end of the day, you know, maybe they won't be the most important things, but it's clearly better to have it than not have it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like in what you were saying, Halo 2, they really wanted people to dual wield and nobody did. And then in Halo 3, they wanted people to use the equipment and then they found out that it was just – it didn't work the right way. Or I think the bubble shield stays open for way too dang long. So I hope that they do stuff, you know.
But yeah, but it also doesn't break the game. You know what I mean? So you got this cool thing that you can use. Like the regenerator is the one that drives me the most nuts. You know?
Yeah. Especially
and then there's
like,
ones you never see. Like you never see the radar jammer. You never see flare. You just don't see it.
Yeah, I think flare screws me up a lot, especially when I'm trying to snipe somebody. Because like you can't have. I think if they actually put a flare onto Pit, it would help that a lot because the sniper area is just way too powerful. He's got all the cover. He's got a regen and a snipe. And you basically have to focus on him and hopefully his teammates. You got to shoot them. I mean, it's just if you put a flare there, it might help out to distract the sniper for a second. But the second you pop out, he can see you. At least that's what I've been noticing from playing. I mean, I've been playing a lot of Slayer lately. Me and Dustin played recently. Remember we playing Slayer on Pit and the snipe just kept taking care of us?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like that it's just way too powerful.
Oh, and then that's the whole map balancing issue.
Yeah. It works in MLG, though, because there is no regen. So.
Well, yeah, that's MLG.
Yeah, I think that. Yes.
So people are asking in the forum thread here, someone's asking how are jetpacks going to affect Griffball. And I don't really – honestly, I don't make the Griffball stuff anymore. That's totally the Griffball guys that do that stuff, and they argue over every little bit of it. So, yeah, so
they're like Star Trek fans, but with Griffball.
Yeah, we got this guy Knockyard who makes the maps for Griffball, and those are ridiculously awesome. And and then they all decide on like the rules and all that stuff for the league. So, you know, which I don't even know if that stuff makes its way into the matchmaking version. Bungie always wants to have the most current version in there, but I'm sure somebody will do something with Griffball. If Griffball doesn't end up as an actual game type in Reach, which it might end up as a game type.
Oh, boy.
By the way, on my part, that's total speculation. So the other thing is that I don't know anything about Reach at all. Like, we don't have any kind of advanced anything. The closest we get to any kind of advanced info is in maybe the week before a game comes out when the press is getting all that stuff. Maybe sometimes we get invited to that kind of stuff and we learn about stuff then. But Bungie posted on their front page, they posted their one of their sessions with their audio guy, the guy who does the Slayer, you know, that guy, Double Kill. And one of the things he said was Griffball. And I don't know if that was a joke or if they were thinking about adding it in. But it's a possibility. They added in zombies.
Yeah,
they did.
I just thought that was – I hope Kotaku doesn't listen to this because they're definitely going to write something like you just said. They're definitely going to have an article by the end of the day if they are listening right now.
Confirmed Griffball in Reach. Let me confirm Griffball is in Reach. Yeah, Halo 2 and Halo Reach. All the Reverse Blue is gonna be unlockable cutscenes. I don't think they wanted me to say that, but I'm gonna put that out there.
Yes, the Warthog has Tusk again.
That's great.
You know, one of the first videos that I don't know if you guys know, but we hired an animator by the name of Monty Ohm.
Yeah,
and we started doing some more custom animations just for more stupid jokes and stuff. And the first one we did was there's a video we did for Halo Waypoint, which was Sarge goes on vacation because he's accrued too much vacation time. He's never taken a vacation,
so he has to.
So he has to. They make him take a vacation. So he goes to Zanzibar or last resort. He goes to the beach, and he's on a beach chair. And he's got a shotgun on a beach chair next to him, a little smaller beach chair. And people were saying, how did you get him to lie down on that beach chair? And I actually convinced somebody that that's in the game, and you just have to run him. You have to run him around the map 50 times until he gets tired, and then he sits down on the beach chair.
There was some kid that thought I worked for Bungie, and I told him to get recon, and he did it, and he was really mad. But I thought he was kidding.
Well, I'm a bit embarrassed to admit this, but that was me, and I thought you could get me recon.
Oh, really? So you really went to that single player map and went all the way up to the top, and there was a recon armor, and you had to press the right button combination to put it on, and when you put it on, that's how you got it. You
actually tried. I did. Here's the weird part. It worked.
I got it now. Everybody else, you could try it now.
I'm kind of glad that phase is over, honestly. Yeah. That the whole, the recon thing, that I'm glad people can get it on their own.
I just hated the whole, if you played with somebody, there was this one thing, there was a screenshot that says something about, it's a guy wearing recon and he's sitting there with a sniper, right? And in the heading of the video, of the picture, it says, put this next to a money sign picture for 50 days in a row, and after the 50 days, you'll get recon. I actually was going through somebody's file share once, and they had that exact same thing in the exact order that it needed to be in. And I wonder how long they kept it there and how mad they were when they figured out that's not how they get recon.
I would have given it to the guy, honestly.
People still forward me those file share items, though. It's like, send this to 50 friends to get recon.
Yeah, I still get them, yeah.
Send me your password.
Yep. Yeah,
I haven't gotten any passwords ones. I haven't gotten any of those your people yet.
As the host of Podtacular, did you guys get recon armor?
No.
I've
only spoken to one person about three or four, but one person at length who works at Bungie about anything or any kind of email, or I don't have any kind of interaction.
I think that goes for all of us when we interviewed Shishka.
Yeah, that was the only person I've ever interacted with. I've never had any. I've sent emails to him a lot asking him if anybody will be on the show, and it's they don't get it.
Don't do it. Let him make Halo.
Yeah, that's what
team. Leave him alone.
Well, I mean, I haven't emailed him in a while, but it was like post ODST and stuff. So.
Wait until after Reach.
Yeah,
exactly. Right after Reach launches, before they start development on the next game. They have like two weeks of requests. So let me ask you guys a question.
Okay.
Do you guys think that in the future that for Podtacular, do you guys will focus on Halo games or focus on games that Bungie makes, assuming they don't make a Halo game in the future? Like, I wonder what's going to happen with Halo.Bungie.org. Is the primary part of Halo.Bungie.org the Bungie.org part, or is it the Halo part?
It seems like it's the Halo part, and we talk about Halo Wars and stuff, so I would assume that depending on everybody else's decision, because I can't make them, that we would primarily stay a Halo show rather than a Bungie. I mean, of course, we would probably talk about it, but
we've had a lot of people ask us this question, whether or not we would stay Halo when the Halo franchise is over, and depending on how big the Halo community will last, and it'll always be up there. I mean, that's just the Halo phenomenon, I think. And there's always going to be something to talk about.
We have to change the name, but if we did a different universe.
Well, the franchise is not going anywhere. I mean, Halo's going to be around. Halo's going to be the primary franchise on the Xbox for, you know, I think a few decades. I mean, it's, you know, right. 343, if you read their job postings and all that, I mean, they're hiring people to do lots and lots of stuff. So it's, you know, I don't think the community is going anywhere, but, you know, we'll see what happens. It's just interesting that we'll have these cool things. I hope Bungie continues to make Halo games. That's my hope.
I think if Halo ever kind of fell out, that all the Halo fans would probably just become Bungie fans, more or less.
I guess, kind of like how, I don't know, the New Orleans basketball team went under, so now they're all Hawks fans, you know, Dallas Mavericks fans or something.
This also, I mean, what happens if the next game that Bungie puts out is not a Halo game and it's not an FPS? I mean, that's not a very easy transition, you know?
No.
A Nintendo DS dating sim? Oh, man.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Hey, what if Disney...
It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen, Brent.
This is probably a question you've been asked lots of times, but just for people who don't know that much. At the time you started making Red vs. Blue, Machinima wasn't really, really big and that much. What was your inspiration to use Halo as a platform to do Machinima and keep you going through to your last season of Red vs. Blue?
Well, we were filmmakers, and we were just looking for something cool to do, and we were playing. I was playing lots and lots and lots of Halo, and you know, that was back in the days before Xbox Live, and so we'd all have to get together and bring our Xboxes over and do LAN parties, which was awesome because all you needed was TVs and Xboxes instead of hauling PCs and monitors everywhere. It's a lot easier to pick up an Xbox and move it, but I mean, that's it. I mean, we were basically Red vs. Blue came out 18 months after the launch of Halo 1 and 18 months before the launch of Halo 2. So it was like right in the middle there when, you know, the Xbox Live had just kind of started a little bit, you know, with Mech Assault and stuff like that. But, you know, it just kind of came out of that where I was just wanting a way to produce something. And Matt and Joel, who I had made movies with, had both moved to L.A. to pursue their movie career. And I was in Austin with Jeff and Gus working at a tech company, and they didn't know anything about film production. Jeff knew a little bit about photography, but that was it. But they hadn't really done any video editing or anything like that. And so, you know, I just wanted a way to produce something with those guys that was efficient and easy to produce. And that's where Red vs. Blue came from, was out of that stuff. And I didn't know about Machinima either. I'd had the kind of the idea for a while to make movies and tell an actual storyline. There wasn't a lot on the web either. You know, there wasn't like there was Homestar Runner was a show, but it was, you know, Strong Bad answering emails and stuff. And there wasn't a lot of content that went from one episode to the next. And I thought, well, let's do something where it's like a long running storyline, but broken up into episodes. And, you know, it just kind of took off. I mean, the growth rate of Red vs. Blue was almost instantaneous. It was like, nobody watched it to suddenly it was just a million downloads in a week. And that took about 3 weeks total for that to happen. So it was pretty nutty. But yeah, I had to see it. But then we found out what we were making was called Machinima, and that they had award ceremonies for this stuff and everything. And so we got to find out about Machinima through Red vs. Blue, which I think
is – So you didn't know what it was?
No. I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen any movies made in video games. Let me back that up a little bit. I had seen the Warthog Jump, and I had seen stuff like where people would put gameplay videos up. Like Halo.Bungie.org would put up people playing Halo, and it would be cut to like Breaking Benjamin or, you know, Limp Bizkit, you know, and stuff like that. And there was that stuff. But I would say Randall Glass and the Warthog Jump was probably the closest thing I'd seen to actually somebody telling a story where he was trying to, you know, get this Warthog to fly as high as possible in the air. But while doing it, he was, you know, you could tell there was like a story going on there. Like there was like a, it almost felt like the player was a character, and he was cutting in like clips from Star Wars and stuff like that. But there's no like characters, there was no dialogue or anything like that. It was just funny moments. And so I'd seen stuff like that, but I hadn't seen anything with like characters or a storyline. And that's what we were trying to do. That's what I always like to do, is that kind of stuff.
Cool. Yeah, so Bernie, if you want to bring up any of the questions on your from your blog response, that's fine. Let's see. Yeah, we'll go ahead with this first one. Moose0030 writes in, what additions are you hoping to find in Reach that weren't in Halo 3, machinima-wise, and how would Griffball be affected by the gameplay in Reach via jetpacks or the Spartans versus Elite game types?
Well, the Griffball effect from jetpacks will totally be up to people who play Griffball. That whole thing has progressed way beyond me. I mean, I had a lot to do with the first two seasons of that league, but there are people who are extremely dedicated to it, like Caleb and Adam, and you know they work on it nonstop. And then Knockyard, who makes all of the maps. So I don't know how it'll affect Griffball, but I know that I'll just look at it when they do it and go, well, that's cool and interesting, and then I'll see how people are way better at it than me. But yeah, as far as – we don't know. I mean, once we get Reach, I don't know anything about Reach other than what's been put out there so far. I'm excited about the fact that you can change the armor, which is nice to have a little bit of variation of characters, even more so than what they had in Halo 3. I think the – you know, all the different loadout stuff definitely lends itself to telling certain kinds of stories. But we'll see. I mean, we don't even know for a fact yet that Reach will have a theater mode. I'm sure everyone's assuming it'll have a theater mode. But I haven't read anywhere myself that that's been announced. So you can't, we don't make any assumptions. You know what I mean? We don't know you'll be able to lower the weapons in Reach at all or anything like that. So it could be a totally different ballgame for us, but we'll just see when it comes out.
It did say somewhere that there was going to be safe films, and at least in the recent game trailers movies that they released, they did say that there was going to be safe films.
That's awesome. But, you know, I got to say something, too, is that, like, even really cool features in a game that seem like they're going to be great for machinima, they're going to just be, like, one or two things that makes them unusable. And so far, you know, Halo has been – and Bungie have been super supportive of everything machinima related. But, like, you can have a save film that's perfect. It shows you exactly how you played Halo and everything looks perfect. But for machinima, if there's any kind of artifact, like any kind of HUD on the screen at all, that completely changes its use for – being able to shooting it cinematically, you know? Right. I don't know why they'd make a new version of it where they don't do that, but you never know. A good example is it never affected us, but people were really concerned about or upset about the fact that you couldn't lower your weapons over Xbox Live. You could only do it in a LAN match or System Link. I don't know if you guys know that or not.
Yeah, that I was really kind of upset with that too.
So, and it's one of those things where not everyone has all their friends in one place to make a machinima movie. So they want to be able to lower the weapons and not, you know, point the guns at each other's faces while they're trying to shoot a scene. But they can't do that over Xbox Live. But in the grand scheme of things, it makes sense to me because you don't want to introduce something at the last minute of the development that makes machinima easier. And, you know, maybe 10% of the overall audience that plays Halo is interested in machinima, maybe. And then you do something that inherently, we found out by lowering the weapon, we can reload twice as fast or something like that. You know what I mean? Something that breaks the game over Xbox Live. That's the last thing that anybody wants, you know? And so right. I can understand why they do it. If you break that over System Link and somebody discovers a glitch via the weapon dropping over System Link, who cares, right?
I mean, with how the button combo is for Halo 3, it wouldn't really make much of a difference even on Xbox Live.
Yeah, but you know what? You never know. You never know. Like, what if they do? What if they find out only doing two of the buttons is what makes you reload faster? You know what I mean? Anytime you change something, you introduce the possibility of a glitch. That's my opinion, at least. And you know, the game is the thing, right? Everything else is like a support structure for it. So if they make a theater mode where they think, oh, well, it's important for people to know that this is shot in Reach, so let's put a Halo 3 Reach bug, you know, in the theater mode games as a call out to it, or let's make sure that, you know, we can see the stats of all the other players in the games and we put that on the right side of the screen, and that's very valuable. Suddenly that makes it much harder to shoot in Machinima for that. And it can be something small, something you can't even think of that does that. So so we don't know. So we'll see. We'll take it the way we always take it, which Halo 3 Reach comes out. We'll make sure that Microsoft and Bungie want us to do it. And did I say Halo 3 Reach? Sorry, Halo Reach comes out. And we'll make sure that Microsoft and Bungie want us to make Red versus Blue videos in it, that they still like it. And then we'll evaluate the game to see if we can do it. I'll give you an example. We couldn't use ODST for Machinima, and that's a Halo game. But it was just slightly different in a way that made it almost impossible to use, because there was no multiplayer mode where you could have full control over the multiplayer environment, because the waves of brutes and grunts would just start coming right away. So your longest take could be about 7 seconds. And it was also the campaign theater mode, so you couldn't rewind.
Right.
You couldn't set up a shot and then, you know, get it exactly how you want. And that's a case in point right there. Not being able to rewind in theater mode, not that big a deal if you're showing gameplay videos. An extremely big deal, a deal breaker for making Machinima in it. So
right.
We'll see. That's the bottom line. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
No rewind.
I guess that. Someone want to take another one?
I'll read it. Next one is from King. King writes to us. He says, "Hello, Podtacular. This is my first submission, so bear with me. I am here to tell you my favorite Red versus Blue moments. Thank you. That's exactly what we'll be asking." Okay. He says his first moment is in season 1 when Lopez and Sheila, the tank, sing a duet about robot love to distract the red team from doing something the blues didn't want to do. They forgot exactly what it was, but he's pretty sure Barney knows. My second favorite moment.
It's also season 2. Not season 1. Yeah.
My second favorite moment was Griff being tortured continuously in the DIY episode to promote the Heretic. Not that. Okay, that's all I got. Perfect. Keep on fretting.
That person's going to love this season of Revelation then, because Griff is tortured endlessly throughout the series. So he will. I'm assuming it's a he. He will definitely like that.
He says frags. Keep on fragging Snowman Hunter and Duke for not being the best people on the forums. Yeah, we do need to get on to them. Peace out, King. Thanks for writing in, man. I think my favorite Red vs. Blue moment is in season 2 when Doc was trying to explain that he was a pacifist. And somebody thought he meant pedophile because it's something that maybe sucks. I thought that was my favorite part of the whole season. Of the whole
That's probably my favorite written joke. The one I'm the most proud of is that one. It makes me laugh too.
that's probably my favorite moment. But yeah, that's from King. Thanks for writing in, buddy. Bernie or Brent, if you guys want to read the next one.
All right. I guess I'll take it. Siete Cinco 75 says, "Hey, everybody, this is Siete Cinco 75, and I hold in my pocket for you a question for Senor Dentes de Pollo. Being a huge fan of the show Machinima and now a part of your Griffball Spring League 2010, how long did all of you guys sit around until Griffball was fully achieved? Oh, and my name is not Siete Cinco, it's O'Malley. Siete O'Malley Cinco signing out."
More O'Malley.
Griffball came together pretty quick. That was here's a great example of how when we have access to something early, good things come out of it, because that was part of the DIY video. We got the I can't remember what the name of the map pack was. It was either Legendary. It was the one that had Standoff and Foundry.
That was the Heroic map.
Was that Heroic?
Yeah. The Legendary had Avalanche.
Right.
And yeah.
Okay. And then Mythic was the last one that came out. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. So when Heroic came out, they asked us to make a video to promote it. And so we said, okay. So they gave us codes, Xbox Live codes. And I think we had about – I think maybe we had the press lead essentially, where we had about 8 days before the game came out to make it. But we kind of knew some stuff, so we wrote up some scripts, shot it really fast. It was a really tight deadline, turned it in, and then we had these maps for 5 or 6 days before anybody else had them. So we were the only people who could play on these maps, and so we're just kind of screwing around, you know, figuring out what we're going to do and what we could do in Foundry and like figuring out maybe some stuff for Red versus Blue. And it was me and Sketch from Bungie, and Frank O'Connor was still at Bungie at that time, and I think Luke Smith, and we were in Foundry just screwing around trying to do stuff. And I was making this thing where I was trying to make a teleporter go through a teleporter, because I thought that'd be a fun way to like change the game in the middle of it. And we must have messed around that in Foundry for like 2 or 3 hours, it felt like, just goofing around doing weird stuff. And then they all had to go. They logged off for something. And then it was me and Gavin sitting there, and I thought, I'm going to try to set something up. And Gavin's still playing around. And so I went out and changed the game to Assault and set up these goals and, you know, set up instant spawn points. And when I initially made it, I called it Rugby, I think, was the name of the game. And then we wanted a way to like just melee each other. So the only thing that you could just melee with were the hammers and the swords, and then did that. And then it was just, I mean, we played it. I have some of those first videos of me and Gavin just like testing it and playing it. The wall looks so ridiculously stupid. The wall so small. The wall is so small you could literally just jump over it if you wanted to. And we were playing and messing around with it. And I remember thinking too, I said to Gav, I said, yeah, we put this wall here and block it off. It's like a court, like a sport. And then we started kicking around ideas for what to call it and tweak it and make the runner a little faster because he didn't have a weapon. And it came together pretty quickly. I'd say Griffball kind of came together in like 12 hours of tweaking the gameplay. And then we just put it out there pretty much day one. And then we made that – Ben made a sports page for it with the league stats. Then he found a way to pull stats from Bungie.net by loading the HTML pages. And it was just a lot of stuff came together all at once. And then it just kind of caught on, and we showed it to Bungie, and they liked it a lot. And they played us in a hump day challenge as all Griffball. And we beat them for once. We beat them at Halo. And and then the first league started was great. And then Bungie even gave recon armor to the team that won the first Griffball league. So that was pretty cool too.
Wow.
And it all came together really fast. It was really cool because I had never tried to make a game or make it, you know, fun. And it came off pretty well, I thought, you know. I used to make maps back for War, the original Warcraft. We'd make these PUD files or something like that, and we'd make maps. But that's just like basic map editing stuff. And it was cool. Griffball was a lot of fun, and I played the heck out of it too. So it was definitely an enjoyable experience. And then they made action figures for Griffball too. So now Jeff gets to walk around the office as the only guy. Action figure essentially based on him, based on Griff. So
right.
It's annoying as hell.
That's cool. One question that I have deals with Marathon 2, comes from Chucky J. He said, who came up with the idea to use Marathon in Red versus Blue, and how much harder was it to capture the scenes?
It was harder. And Matt, you know, that's another thing too, is like when you talk about like what we're working on now with Red vs. Blue, even as far back as season 3, we used Marathon, and Matt added lip sync to Marathon. You know, we did that all in post production, and then we did the same thing like with the later versions of Vic that we used. We did that all in Crazy Talk, so he looks almost animated. You know, Vic, the operator who talks to the Red vs. Blue guys. It was just that was a writing thing, so just like that he goes back in time, so we used Marathon. So it was just it just seemed like a perfect fit, you know, that, and we had people point out to us endlessly that if he went back in time, he wouldn't go to Marathon because Marathon was forward in time. And we were like, yeah, but it looks like an older game. That's why we used it. You know, it's not that deep into the narrative or anything like that. So right. it just seemed like a really funny gag to have Church end up back in time in the Marathon universe. And plus, he was talking to a computer at that point in time, you know, like dealing with this snarky AI. And so it felt like it was very appropriate for him to be, you know, in the Marathon universe where you're constantly harangued by these artificial intelligence gone amok.
Okay. Because, I mean, that was definitely an interesting twist, because you could see where it's almost like, yeah, that does make sense to go back in time and with how the graphics were for that game.
Somebody just got mad because he said, I'm not a sponsor and I haven't seen the episode where Donut dies yet. It's like, that's the end of last season. So, sorry, guys. I don't know. That's not a spoiler of any kind. He's laying there dead at the beginning of the first episode.
Oh boy.
I'm sorry. What was that last thing you said?
I don't even remember anymore. Okay. Yeah, I forget. Okay. One of you guys want to take the next one? Brent G.
I'll do it.
Take one of the short ones.
We got it from the short one?
Or I don't know. Pick a random one.
Just,
we don't have to be going in order.
I'm going to do ads well.
Okay.
That's cool.
Do ads.
Cool guy. We got it from our good friend from across the pond as well, Fit, and he writes, "Hey, it's Ads here. I'm blowing the dust off my keyboard to send a submission. It has been a while. Just wanted to say I've been waiting for the current series of Red vs. Blue to come out and hoped it would be good. Well, let's hope it's good. So far, I've enjoyed the two episodes that have come out. I even sat up till 3 a.m. to watch episode 2. A couple of questions I have for you. We'll just do them in order. How did you come up with the idea of Red versus Blue? I think we already discussed that, didn't we? So, right, we already discussed that.
Yeah, that's why I kind of wanted to skip around.
Oh, okay. let me just read it.
That's fine.
How do you keep the guys working in the office with all the video games around? I'm going to guess it's kind of like, how do you not eat the pizza when you work at a pizza place? Is that kind of – would you say that's right, Bernie?
Yeah, I think it's right, but we don't make – we don't make games, luckily, so we still love to play them. You know, I mentioned if you make games a lot, then you kind of, grow tired of them. But no, this the whole achievement thing, I mean, that's a real deal with me and Jeff. And now Jeff, I don't know how he did it. He turned his whole job into playing games all day and recording achievement videos.
Oh, and, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And no, and he loves it. I mean, there's actually – it really is a clean line in the company where there's some guys that are movie guys and some guys that are video game guys. And Jeff and I are probably straddle that the most, that line where, I probably lean more towards the movie side now and Jeff leans more towards the video game side. But me and Gus and Jeff are the gamers in the company. And then Matt, Nathan, and Monty, Brandon are the movie guys. They don't really talk much about games like the conversations we had about Bungie going to Disney or whatever we said before. like they wouldn't talk about stuff like that. Like they're more interested in movie stuff than they are with game stuff. I mean, not everybody's a game player. Like Matt is probably the least video game of all of us. Like he's the least gamer. Is that the right way to say it? Least gamer? Or he's
I guess the lowest guy lowest who plays the least amount of video games.
Yeah, he doesn't play anything.
He's a rank one. And Bernie's like a 30.
Yeah, I don't know. Matt would be a rank one. Like Matt, we'd be showing him how to move the character around and stuff like that.
So, but like, Matt, there's my grandmother, is basically equivalent.
But like for instance, the other day when the Xbox switched to USB sticks, right? Jeff and Gus and Jack and I went out at lunch to make sure we had USB sticks, and the rest of the company was just like, "We don't even know what this is." That's okay. You guys seem excited by it, so that's cool for you guys. So it's different. So, yeah. So, we can get distracted by some stuff. Jeff and Gus and I can, but, it's the rest. There's always other guys there to pick up the slack. So,
I wanted to ask you.
Well, sorry, keep going.
I wanted to ask you about the USB. What do you think of that move from Microsoft?
Dude, I love it. We're so mobile. Like, I might not be on the same Xbox, 20 minutes in a row. I had to move around a lot. I have in my house, I have 3 Xboxes, and at work we've got 25 of them, that just like I have 4 at my workstation to do Red versus Blue. And so I might have to move around quite a bit. I just wish they'd make every single game day one a game on demand that you can download, because I hate dealing with discs. If I could just put everything on a memory stick and just move around, I'd pay $60 for a game on demand.
Yeah.
But they're not going to do that, though. Because GameStop or because of the retailers, they're never going to get that done, at least not in this generation.
I don't know. I think we're moving towards it. I think that as more people start to use downloadable content, I mean, I think it's slowly moving towards that kind of model of payment. I mean, you look at the popularity of Steam and stuff like that. And I mean,
I bought a piece to go.
I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I like physical copies of like movies and games and stuff, but
I get that. I'm not that kind of guy. But I know a lot of people are that are collectors. Like, do you guys ever read Ain't It Cool News? at all?
No.
It's Harry Knowles' site. It's a movie site. They're guys that are here in Austin, and they're big into movies, and they have huge DVD collections. I mean, they're just like – they're very impressive. And I'm a kind of guy, like when I buy a video game, I will stand in the parking lot and throw away the box and the manuals and just walk away with the disc. Like, because I just don't want to deal – I just don't want to deal with all that stuff.
That's funny because, like, we interviewed Ryan 14, and he's the exact opposite. He loves reading the manuals.
Yeah.
Ryan 14 is from a different podcast. So.
I remember when I was a kid – when I was riding back home from, I guess, like wherever, I just bought a game or something. And you obviously had to, you know, wait during the ride, not always, you know, pull out the you know, instruction manual out of the N64 box or whatever and just read it on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
It was always fun. At this point, though, it just kind of gets in the way. I've got like a stack of physical games here that, you know, I guess I could definitely see some of the just normal retail copies going away. But then there's stuff that I have, like my Halo 3 Legendary Edition, like Master Chief helmet. Like, I love that thing. If I was only going to display one thing in my house, it would be the Master Chief helmet. Like, I use it as a hat rack. Like, I have like a baseball cap on it right now, just sitting there. But there's also stuff like the Mass Effect 2 Collector's Edition. Like, I hated the retail copies box art. For Mass Effect 2, it just looked really, really ugly to me. So I ponied up 10 extra bucks just to have a game that didn't have that box art on it. You know, I mean, the art book in it isn't very great, and it comes with like an extra comic and like a metal box. But
yeah,
I just like that. You know, kind of physical, cool collector's stuff. Like, oh, I've got my Mass Effect 2 art book. You know, standing up, I'm displaying it. But.
We were talking about that this week on the podcast, where I think I might know why you don't like the Mass Effect artwork. Do you use the default Shepard, or do you have your own Shepard that you use?
No, I have my own Shepard, and I've come to that conclusion too, that it's that kind of disconnect that you have between your Shepard, the Shepard that you know from your own narrative arc, and then the default Shepard that they have that's kind of, you know, like he's kind of shaved head. Mine has a little more hair on him, and I accidentally, from the first game, set my Shepard's eyes too close together, so now he has this weird, like, cross-eyed look whenever he looks at, like, Massar. But, I mean, I kept that in there. I think I had the option to edit my Shepard when I loaded up Mass Effect 2, but I just kept it in there because I thought that was a cute little quirk in the character.
Yeah, they should not put Shepard on the box art. They shouldn't at all. They should just put the other guys, the other team members.
Yeah.
And that's it. Because there's no association.
Well, what about people that use female shepherds? Their disconnect must be like entirely like twice as bad as mine, because I mean, at least mine is male.
Yep. Gus always makes female characters, and he says it's just because he doesn't want to look at a guy all the time. So
yeah, that's the excuse I've always heard from like WoW players. I don't want to look at a guy's all day if I'm.
Adswell had one more question. Here's a link in the show notes. Can you see them, Bernie? Can you see the links?
I'm sorry, what'd you say? I broke up on
a little bit. Can you see the show notes?
Oh, yeah.
There's under Adswell, there's a link. He's asking about a picture. He wants to know where you got the modded or the – I don't know if the controllers are modded, but at least the casing around them is. He's wondering how you guys got those, or did you guys do that?
I'm pulling it up right now, but is it my desk with all the different colored controllers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is where's the link to this? Oh, you mailed it to me. Sorry. Yeah, I know what it is. Those are the ones I use every day. We got that from a place called dansdecals.com. dansdecals.com. ALS.com. Dansdecals.
The TVs are Best Buy TVs. I know this.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I can't say enough about those things. Those are Dynex TVs, and I don't like to plug a lot of products, but those are $179 LCDs that'll show HD. Those things are rock solid, dude. We love those things. In fact, I'll tell you something. When we go to a convention, that if we have to like have a display TV, it's actually cheaper to buy a Dynex at a local Best Buy than it is to rent it from the convention center. Like at a convention, they want to rent you a TV for like $900 for 3 days. That's not a joke.
Wow.
And we could go out and spend, you know, $450 or $500 and get a like a 28-inch TV, and then, you know, give it to one of the guys or put it in the office or something like that. Yeah. If you ever see a big TV hanging on our wall in a picture from the office, That's where it came from. Is it came from a convention. So.
Okay. Huh.
Sorry. My so love of Dynex. Look how excited I got.
So hey, you like Dynex TV. Fair enough. So I got it. We can – well, I'll call my people, call your people when we're making it. Oh, yeah,
he has the Best Buy discounts.
Yeah, the
oh, dude, you know, you don't even know. Like, I probably get that TV for like $65. It's ridiculous.
Are you kidding me? Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like HDMI cables, you know how they're like $1 online, but they're $80 in the store. That's because they really cost Best Buy $1, and I get them for like $3. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm looking online right now. They have a 19-inch 720p for $170. That's really good for an HD TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess they're okay. I mean, I don't really recommend them compared to Samsung, but I guess because they're cheap.
We'll put a link in the show notes for you guys.
Everybody wants a TV from Best Buy.
Yeah, go crazy.
Tomorrow they're going to have like Best Buy today stock rose at their surplus of Dynex TVs.
Today's anywho. Podtacular is brought to you by Dynex.
Quality brand TVs. This is Bernie Burns, and I approve this message.
The Steph 117 says, "Hey Bernie, what is your favorite RVB moment and your favorite episode of the shorts?"
Favorite episode of the shorts, Catch for sure. Although I do like immersion.
Oh boy, that was funny.
Catch was pretty funny.
Yeah, I really like that one too. And then my favorite moment from Reverse Blue, they come and go a lot. I mean, it's depending on what I watch. The good news is we've made so much Red versus Blue at this point is that I don't remember a lot of it, and I have to watch it to like when I'm writing. I'll sit down and have my own like mini marathon. And the best part about that is that because I don't remember it, but I wrote it, I find it funny. And so it's great to like see something that's essentially tailor written for you. That you don't like remember, and you're watching it for the first time. So, I'd say right now I can give you my favorite three moments. I love that teleporter sequence that's at that in season one with Tucker and the teleporter.
Oh
that,
yeah,
I love that sequence so much. I like in episode 39 when they stumble into the multiplayer match, Sarge and Caboose do. It was so fun to actually do like actual Halo humor for once, but like
Zealots.
Multiplayer humor. Yeah, the Zealots yelling at each other. And then I like in Reconstruction the moment where they fight the meta and Caboose throws the grenade into the wall like 4 feet or 4 inches in front. He throws it straight into the wall. And those always make me laugh. But I just watched season 5. We're putting out new DVDs in the summer, like new versions of them. Kind of remastered versions, and I had to watch I had to watch season 4, which is actually, you know, if I had a least favorite, that would be my least favorite is season 4. And I watched it. I had a great time watching it, man. I'm like, man, we really stacked this thing with jokes. So I enjoyed it. I love them all. I think that I have a lot of fun making it, and I have a lot of fun watching them even to this day. So.
Okay. Yeah. You want to do more of your blog questions?
Yeah, I think we're kind of
wrapping up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're asking stuff that people have asked before or that your guys have asked. Let me see.
I don't think we're going to get to all the submissions because we even got to half and we're.
Yeah. We're not going to make it through all of them.
Do a lightning round with me. Do a lightning round if you want.
Okay.
To.
We can do a lightning round.
Okay. Hey, Brent's the best at that.
There's a few on your blog too that we can do lightning round. Like, I like this one. Talk about local food places in Austin.
I'm going to go eat at a place called Gordo's Donuts. Tomorrow.
You guys have talked about that, haven't you, on your podcast?
Have we?
Oh, many, many times.
Yeah, I believe you have.
Gordo's, have we?
I think
no,
so.
It's a donut place no. Where you get like.
Oh, I thought you meant just like Austin.
Oh well, no, just, places yeah, in food places. Yeah.
I'd say I thought that was every episode.
Oh yeah, we do it. That's the joke. He's making fun of me because I always get mad at the guys. I'm like, nobody gives a shit about where you eat in Austin. And they're always talking about like some place they ate that nobody else is going to be able to go eat at. Austin's pretty cool because it doesn't have a whole lot of chains. It just has a lot of small, like little. It has a small little places, like independent places. It's really cool.
Right.
So Austin's cool. You should come visit Texas if you've never been.
Well, maybe
you can read Maximum Analysis.
Maybe next time I'm
question.
Down in Dallas, I can come visit you guys.
It's okay if you read Maximo. I mean, doesn't have questions because we have favorite moments. Do you want me to read Maximo nonsense real quick? Read it real quick.
Yeah, we'll just breeze through these, and there's a lot of questions on the blog. We can do a lightning round of those.
Okay, I'll just read Maximo real quick. Maximo writes, "Well, I would be honored if the voice of the spirit of Leonard Church would answer my questions today. I guess he has questions, but I read through it. I haven't seen. First off, you guys have – I guess there's a question. You guys have any intervention of spreading the show across the pond?
Well, we got Gavin and Ben, you know. That's the best that the UK has to offer. I don't know what to say about that. You know, that's a right. bad first foot forward. We have Nico, who's from Paris. You know, he does our music for us for Red versus Blue. So, no, we don't have any plans to expand production outside of our offices anymore. All of our productions are coming in-house. So if somebody wants to work with us, we're going to bring them down to Austin because it's worked just so well with Monty. Can't say enough good things about it. It's been just really great.
I obviously have seen the shows, but I only know three other guys who have watched Red vs. Blue series, and there isn't even any mention of it on Xbox Live features, i.e. the Inside Xbox shows, or the British version of OXM over here in the UK. The shows are so funny. I think there would be hordes of new fans. Secondly, how did Rooster Teeth think of those crazy plots? Did you just make it up as you went along, or did you have a plot to follow from the beginning?
The first part of that question is interesting. We have a weird thing, and it's probably something that we need to be better about, is that we don't actively seek any kind of publicity. Like, even if we're nominated for an award, we have a weird thing where it's probably to our detriment, but we don't like go to the audience and say, hey, we're up for this award. Will everyone please vote for us? We've been doing this 8 years now, and I think that stuff gets old really quick. You know what I mean? There was a point in time where you couldn't read anything about Machinima when people were reporting Machinima and not also read about Red vs. Blue. And then it got to be a point with even like where people would report on Halo and Red vs. Blue would constantly be mentioned in there. And I guess to put it bluntly, we were getting kind of sick of reading about us. And I think we were worried that other people were really, really going to get sick about reading about us. So we kind of just had a thing where we just never really went out there and really sought any kind of publicity like that, just because, I don't know, it just felt like, you know, we were kind of, in a sense, worried about backlash a little bit.
Okay.
So, and then what was the second part of that was, how did we come up with the ideas up for it, for Red vs. Blue?
Do you guys just make it up, or do you follow something from the start?
No, we've been making up as we go. I think the whole, like, freelancer stuff started when Tech showed up, and then the AI stuff with Church started in season 3, but we kind of made the trilogy because we put a lot of stuff out there for like in the background for people to figure out, and a couple guys in the office were just like, yeah, I didn't really get that from that, so we thought we'd tell a story that more explicitly said some of that. So the story of Recollection is based on Blood Gulch Chronicles, essentially, like going back and filling in some of those gaps. But yeah, we totally just make it up as we go along. This season is the farthest ahead we've ever been on working on stuff. We're like 4 or 5 weeks ahead, and we're usually like week to week on everything that we do. And that's just not – we can't do that anymore.
That's good.
You guys are growing so quickly.
Yeah.
It's been 8 years. We've actually been – you know, it's been 8 years, and we're just, you know, kind of maintaining and being here and trying to do stuff. And you know, there's a lot of companies that try to grow a lot faster, and some of them grow a lot faster, and a lot more of them just kind of go away, you know?
Right.
Or they get stuck in – what happens to a lot of web content producers is like they would do like what we did with Red vs. Blue Animated. They wouldn't make it. They would just have an idea for it and pitch it, and then they would get a little bit of interest from a television network, and they would immediately stop their web production. And then 2 years later, you're like, hey, whatever happened to those guys that made that Halo Machinima show? Whatever happened to them? It's like, yeah, you know, they thought they were going to go on TV, and then they ended up not going on TV, and now they forgot to make their show because they concentrated too much on that. So we just want to make sure that we're not those guys.
Right. Well, you guys have had plenty of experience, too, for over 8 years. I think you're pretty well established by now.
Yeah. I don't know if well-oiled machine applies to our group, but
yeah,
it's something. Some kind of – it's like a squeaky, rusty machine, you know?
Yeah. Right before we go on – I don't know if you guys have thought about this, and I hope I'm not bringing anything down on Rooster Teeth or not, but what's going to happen when you and Gus and Joel decide to move on from Rooster Teeth, and will someone else pick it up, or will that be the end of it, or is it going to do it till you die? What's kind of the situation there?
Well, here's the good thing about the way we have built the company is that I'm a firm believer, and this gets into business stuff, and I realize this could be boring to a lot of people, but there's no outside investors. There's no outside investors in Rooster Teeth. And we don't have any debt or anything like that. We paid for all of our own equipment. We paid everything. We're about to move into a new facility that will essentially have paid off as soon as we go in there. So, when you talk about like Rooster Teeth going away or anything, I mean, people will always move on. You know, people have ideas for other shows that they want to work on, or, you know, other careers that they want to do. They get just tired of doing web stuff or whatever. But we kind of just do what we want to do. You know what I mean? I think that's what keeps it fresh for us and interesting. Like shows like Red versus Blue and even this immersion thing we did. I mean, that's not going to be, you know, we're not doing that so we get noticed by Hollywood or anything like that. We're just doing it because it's fun stuff that we want to try and do. And, we'll just keep going like that, you know. I always say to, like, when we have meetings with people that talk about this kind of thing, we talk about like retirement plans in the future and stuff like that. And I always said, like, if I was going to retire, I would retire to do the stuff that I'm doing right now anyway. You know what I mean? I'm not like working at a job waiting to go sailing. You know what I mean? Or I'm a guy who works at a tech company who wants to work in film. I'm already doing that. You know what I mean? I'm doing the goofy kind of the hobby stuff that I was very, very lucky enough that it became an actual business. So I think the main thing is now we're just trying to get looking forward. We're trying to get a fresher perspective. You know what I mean? We've been doing this for a while. And, you know, we're trying to get in people like Gav and Ben and Brandon and Monty, you know, who are just like kind of like a new generation of guys that are coming on. And, you know, we're leaning pretty heavily on them, and we'll be adding more people as we go. And, you know, you're always just looking for fresh talent and people who are into what they're doing. So that's how I see it working in the future.
Okay. He also writes, P.S. I can't choose a single clip of Red versus Blue as my favorite, but he's got two kind of favorites. So the first one is the introduction to the new Halo 3 maps, where Sarge has one of his best quotes ever. The quote is, straight down the middle, that's like hitting from behind, but round the front. And number two, my name is Leonard. Well, maybe you could read this one. Right? You want to read this
one? Yeah, I pulled the Google Docs. Sorry, I'm like back and forth between all these things we're talking about.
All the tabs, yeah.
I'll quote it to you because it's a quote of Church, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
Greg?
Yeah, I got it here.
Okay.
My name is Leonard Church, and you will fear my laser face. I hope I didn't blow that out too much.
Oh, that's great.
That's his second favorite. And honestly, Rivers Blue is the best show on the web. Many thanks to Rooster Teeth, O, and Dustin, G. Lewis, Brent, and the other guests, which I guess he wasn't aware that Bernie was going to be on. the rest of the show. Keep on fragging Griff. And to a dismay of everybody else, we won't read your submissions for the endearment of the show. We will answer them in another sort of way later, which we've already talked about. But sorry, everybody else. Good job to everybody else who sent short ones in there and got them read. Which doesn't mean in future episodes we encourage you to write short submissions.
No. Yeah, it's just time constraints, and we've already been sitting here for 3 hours.
Yeah, three so and a half.
We want to go ahead and try to wrap things up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's the blog post? I actually don't have that up.
I have it right here.
Oh. I mean, okay, so you're going to read it?
Okay. Pick up some ones that we haven't done, and we'll do it.
Oh, it's on Red. That's probably why I couldn't.
We'll do a quick lightning round.
Let Brent do it. He hasn't done too much. Brent.
Okay, Brent.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you need? Okay, so what do I include in the lightning round here?
Just some of the ones from the Red versus Blue blog. Right.
Okay, what are some of the long-term goals for Rooster Teeth, both the site and the videos?
Basically, what I just said, you know, is that, you know, just keep growing the company, and then for the videos, we just want to move more into live action, some other animation, and then be able to start producing features. I guess probably somewhere on the big horizon is producing stuff that goes into theaters eventually.
Will we ever see Pongo again?
No, probably not see Pongo again.
somebody wants to know, is Lopez coming back?
Lopez has more of the ability to come back than any other character, and I like Lopez a lot. So we'll see.
Will Lopez ever speak English?
You know what? We've thought a couple different times about having – we've had a lot of different ideas for Lopez where years and years ago No, probably not. We've talked about how do we make Lopez speak English for the first time. Like everybody walks away and then Lopez says a line in English and nobody hears it. Or one time we had a funny idea that he speaks whenever he speaks in English. Nobody can understand him. We were going to have the guy who does the voice of Strong Bad for Homestar Runner be his English voice. And, you know, there was lots of different ideas. Unfortunately, Matt Chapman's a busy guy, so we've always talked about it, but he's never had the time to do it. But I don't think Lopez, no. I don't think at this point he'll ever speak English. He's too cemented.
It's somebody's asking it's the most recent one. He's asking – I don't know if it's more of a question. I'm just saying this because it's more like a – just let you know. He's asking, why is Joel currently playing Hannah Montana the movie?
I don't know. Is he? That might be a gag somebody did at The Office where if he left his gamer tag logged in, they loaded up Hannah Montana. So he'd show up on his gamer card. But yeah, I don't know anything about that. Let's talk to him about it.
All right, Brett, you got another one?
Where do you see Rooster Teeth in 5 years?
I see us in our new building, and I see us making live action stuff for the web in addition to other animation stuff. I mean, it's the big question is, are we doing Machinima? I don't know if we'll continue to do Machinima 5 years from now, but I probably wouldn't have said we'd be doing this stuff 5 years ago. So it's tough to say.
ETO? Does that make any sense to you?
ETO?
The nope. RVBTO.
Oh, RVBTO. Oh. Yeah. RVBTO is it's one of the biggest Red vs. Blue fan events that takes place. And this year it's happening – it's in Toronto every year. And this year it's happening the week after Comic-Con. Let me see if I got that right. But I'm going up there for it this year. Matt's going up and Joel is going up. So if you're a Red vs. Blue fan and you want to go to the biggest get-together, RVBTO is – definitely the one to go to. And then there's also RVB Can West. We have a lot of fan events in Canada. RVBTO is July 31st through August 1st. It's a weekend in Toronto. So you should come see us at RVBTO.
Unfortunately, I will be in D.C. I cannot go.
And if you go to rvbto.ca, you can see like the crowd that goes to this thing and how ridiculous they are, and they're awesome. Because they have a video up from Vimeo from last year.
Okay.
They do a live capture the flag event. I see Caleb here leading the charge. He was the Griffball commissioner at the time.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's fun.
Greg, your turn. Okay. Greg?
Here's one. I don't understand the question completely, but do you have any plans to release different types of drunk tanks?
Yeah, I think I read that one there too, because we did one where we tried to play Left 4 Dead survival mode and just screamed at each other constantly. And I think that's like up to 1.5 million views on YouTube or something like that now. So I always want to do stuff like that, but it's you know, you don't want to make it tired and stupid. We did that again for ODST as well. Maybe. We're always trying to convince Gus to do a video version of the podcast. And it because it's an hour long and it's tough enough for him to organize it, he just is resisting it every step of the way. But we'll try to get him to do a video version of the drunk tank.
Well, I mean, you don't have to do an hour for a video. It could be like 20 minutes.
Well, it also kind of changes it too. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, we're animation guys, so people already don't know what we look like. And then the drunk tank is kind of like radio stuff. So maybe it's better. Maybe it's better if people have their ideas of what we look like in their heads. As
opposed to what we look like. Oh boy. How's Gus's sex life going?
Well, he hasn't been in Jeff's house for a while, so he seems to only have sex in Jeff's house when Jeff's not there. So I don't know. There's a lot of questions I don't ask Gus, and that would be top of that list.
Okay. Maybe we can get him on the show sometime. Brent?
All right, waffles or pancakes?
I'm a waffle guy.
Yeah, I'm a waffle guy too.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That was a hilarious question. I love it.
Yeah.
That's great. Good conversation. What does Joel actually do?
Yeah. Joel?
Yeah. Joel, that's a question here. What does Joel actually do?
Joel is the lead on our commercial stuff. He pretty much does all of that now. Him and Matt. But Joel does most of the heavy lifting on that stuff. So if you see a TV commercial with video game footage in it, there was a good chance it was made by Caboose.
Yes, Caboose. Do you watch any other Machinima, and if so, which do you like?
Well, I watched when it was on the air, I watched Smooth Fuse Counter-Strike one. Why is the name escaping me for some reason? Right? Leet World. I don't know why the name is escaping me right there. But that Leet World, I watched that when it was on the air. What else have I watched? I'm trying to think of stuff I've seen that I've liked. It's hard for me to look at stuff and, you know, independent of Red versus Blue. Does that make sense? You know, when I watch especially Halo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Edgeworks, I like those guys a lot. With they made the Heretic. Trying to think, I don't really watch a whole lot of Machinima. Like, I don't go out of my way to watch Machinima.
Right.
But my favorite piece of all time was those same guys who did Leet World. They did a piece called "A Day in the Life of a Turret," and it's in Portal.
Oh, and yes, that was a good one.
It's really great. It's really, really great. But nope, I don't really watch a lot of other stuff. You know what I mean? It's kind of hard too, because when we first started, I watched a lot of Machinima, and a lot of it was Halo Machinima that came out, and we kind of ran into problems with Machinima filmmakers in that they somehow associated our fans' opinion of their work with us. And so if our fans said, we don't like this, this is not as good as Red vs. Blue, or we don't like this, this seems like a ripoff of Red vs. Blue, then the filmmakers would get upset and say, the Red vs. Blue guys said we were ripoffs. And we've never said anything, we've never called anything a ripoff ever or anything like that. You know what I mean? And so it's just like it became difficult for us sometimes to get involved with other Machinima stuff.
Okay, I think that's all the questions that I've seen on the... Oh, here's a funny one. EMP proof building? Question mark. I guess he meant
for the servers.
Oh, maybe that's what he meant. Maybe it's the context of the servers and stuff like that. Maybe. What about you guys? What's some of the Machinima? Do you guys watch other Machinima shows?
I did watch the Codex.
That's Edgeworks. That's the guys that made the Heretic.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I like the Codex. I guess I watched The Spartan Life because we've had them on a few times.
Yep.
By
the way, The Spartan Life is a great one. I don't know why I didn't mention them. And they're also on Waypoint now as well.
Yeah, they released an episode last week.
Yep. Actually. Yep. Yeah. Guys, the guys you make that are very, very cool guys. The guy who plays Damien in that, very cool guy.
Actually, our current server is admin by one of the guys that does. Gosh, I'm blanking on the name now. The Spartan Life.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys they're actually
at Waffle Iron, whatever.
Yeah. His name is Nick Wallace. I forget what character he plays in The Spartan Life, but yeah, that's who our server's with right now. It's the same. The same server that The Spartan Life's on, but we're moving off soon. So they're pretty cool guys, I have to say. They've had some pretty cool interviews that I think they've really done a good job in the community, at least.
Would you count RB and the Chief as some sort of?
Yeah, RB and the Chief.
Because that's hilarious. I'm just gonna say RB and the Chief. Yeah, is pretty funny.
There are things like half Machinima, half action figures. It is very, very funny.
Yeah, I don't really like the guy who does it, but
top 10 Halo 3 series by Anoj.
Why don't you like the guy that does it? Why? What's
he just seems to be very arrogant. I mean, I don't know. He put out those other videos on YouTube saying why everybody who tries to do Machinima is stupid.
Isn't that a gag though? Isn't he doing that?
No, that was serious. No, he wasn't.
Oh, okay. No. Never mind.
That's serious. Digital Fear is the one that makes those.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's pretty cool.
Oh, he is? I never spoke.
We're actually trying to get him on the show.
Oh well, we got a good chance now.
I think it was intended to be. I think it was intended to be a gag.
It was. It was. What was it? Matchmaking? Was that a series? What it was called? Or this live something or other?
I just thought he was being completely serious. So.
No. yeah, top 10 series by Anosh. Have you seen any of those, Bernie?
Mm-mm.
Those are actually pretty cool.
Maybe I have and didn't know they were a series, though, if they're a top 10 video.
Look through
what about web stuff? Do you guys watch anything else on the web at all? Like any other the web series that are out there? Not just machine stuff.
I'm a lot more of the gaming. Get some gaming stuff.
I like zero punctuation. I like that.
Oh, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
You guys watch Mega 64?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watch Mega 64.
Those guys are always right next to us at the booth at PAX. They are a f-ing riot. They are so funny. God. Yeah. If you've never heard of them before, you've never watched them, and you're listening to this, you should definitely check out Mega64.com and check out Smooth Few Films. They got a cool thing on Revision 3 now that they do called Web Zeros, and they've actually had us – they filmed some of that in our offices at Rooster Teeth. It's a live-action thing they do, and it's about guys trying to make it on the web. It's funny stuff.
Okay. Very cool. Let's see. I'm trying to look through my subscriptions here and see what I watch.
I mean, the only other thing I watch is Loaded from CNET, but I don't really know if you want to count that. Or like, I watch the IGN daily thing.
Nah, that doesn't count.
Like, I was making. I mean, I watch that, but I don't. I'm more of a more in news stuff. I entertain myself, I guess. I guess I just play Halo. More about playing it than I watch Red vs. Blue. I have the first two DVDs, but that's it.
I got the box set for Christmas with the 10% coupon thing that gets sent out to everyone.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, so I did that.
That's our sophisticated marketing at work right there.
Yeah, I did that, and then I bought two shirts with the 5% one. I got the red team and blue team one. Now, I was going to get like the original Red vs. Blue one, but you guys were out of stock.
Yep.
I'm assuming those always go out at Christmas time.
Yeah, it's hard too because we actually do retire shirts too. Like my favorite shirt of all time was the one we made that just said Blue Army on it. That's it. It was a gray like gym shirt and it just said Blue Army. And that's Joel's favorite shirt too, but it just didn't sell as well. It's always a big deal in our company if you're the guy who designs a shirt that sells well.
I've seen somebody wearing the I Like Me a lot.
That's a good one. Yep.
Yeah. And the camping one?
Yeah, the camping one is probably the best-selling one of all time.
Yeah.
Although anyway, I guess
it's kicking up there.
It's about time to wrap it up and call it a show.
It's about that time, and for everyone who didn't, for whose questions we didn't get answered in the submissions, we will have Bernie answer those in probably text form and let you know his answers on that. So yeah, thanks again, Bernie, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Thanks, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys having me. And I love Podtacular. Keep going. Keep fragging.
Thank you. Yeah, and hopefully we'll guys have you guys on maybe around the Reach release. Maybe we can get some other of the RT staff on.
You bet. Or absolutely.
And you guys are welcome to come on at any time. I don't know. I definitely enjoyed this time.
Yes. Fun.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe we can figure out a way to have guests on the Drunk Tank eventually.
Hey, that worked perfectly.
Blood hey, trust.
just so you know, Brent, as I'm quoting him, doesn't really do very much. So Brent was
no, he's just being very quiet. He's going through nostalgia right now.
He's like, oh, yeah. You're Bernie.
This is true. I'm starstruck.
In the sepulcher? Yeah, I bet.
Okay, well, real quick before we leave, tell everyone again where they can find you and your podcast.
Well, you can find our show, Red vs. Blue, at redversusblue.com. That's redvsblue.com. And then you can listen to the Drunk Tank podcast on iTunes. Subscribe there. Comes out every Wednesday. Or you can visit redversusblue.com/drunktank and participate in our forums there as well.
Sweet. Okay, well, thanks, guys, for listening in. This has been episode 224. And until next time, I am Dust Storm.
I'm G. Lewis.
I'm Bernie Burns.
Burn Gamer. Starstruck.
Listening.
Sitting here doing nothing.
Starstruck. Da-da-da. We'll be right back.
week on the GamerCast Network. On Gamertag Radio, episode 236, find out what really happened between Hip Hop Gamer versus Insomniac Games. On Podtacular, Bernie from Rooster Teeth drops by to answer some red versus blue questions. Thankfully, no team killing was involved. Episode 147 of Podtoid includes a lot of discussion about games and stuff, but in reality, it's mainly about Brad Nicholson's knowledge of RoboCop, and ironically, his complete lack of knowledge regarding Buckaroo Banzai. Discover the community that brings you all these great podcasts and more at GamerCastNetwork.com.